Good morning. Well, I haven't been to a meeting for many years now, and particularly this early in the morning. But I also had to miss half of my breakfast too, Bill. That's what you have to owe me. I attended the agronomy breakfast, and because we were honoring one of our own faculty member, Carl Rosen, receiving a fellow today. So it's a lot of celebrations. But in this particular case, I call it, because the title, you know, in the book is not very attractive, talking about the background and so forth. I thought I'd change it. In celebration of Bill Kossman's career in pesticide, and today, of course, you see a big lineup of speakers. And, I was asked to talk about the historical context, since I'm the one who have seen him from the very beginning until now, and I think most of you probably have not done that. Bill just finished 40 years of a career in pesticide research, and so most of you come much later, but I was here before that. But in the 40 years, I think it's important to put some context. Just look at Bill's accomplishment and so forth. We have actually had a whole set of slides, but I'm not going to go through them. You can read them about his specific accomplishment, the awards he won, and the kind of publication records he had. But I thought I'll give you some context on why, even though just look at that alone, is a tremendous accomplishment, but in the context of pesticide research, this was even more important. And that's why I'm probably one of the few who have experienced that, and I want to share with you how far we have come since those days. And that will give you some context to you people that are thinking, what the future might be. Well, Bill came to Washington State about the middle of 1970s, and that's in a way it was sort of more or less close to the beginning of lots of pesticide research. I started at Washington State actually in 65 with a specific purpose to do pesticide research. I had no experience in pesticide, and I was tremendously fearful coming to Washington State for the interview, because the person who ran the slides is named Dr. Henry Smith. Some of the old timers may remember that when we used to prepare slides, everybody followed Dr. Henry Smith's guidelines. He is the one very strict about how slides should be done. And here I was going to Washington. First, I have to show him how the slides were presentable, if I'm going to be to join the faculty. And then I have to explain what's on the slides. Well, what I did on the slide was just one of the early pathways on 2,4-D degradation. Right? Didn't know anything about it, but I thought I copied from the textbook, and at least I can show it something like that. So I came to Washington State for interview, and a whole bunch of people, and I noticed a lot of people actually had much more experience with pesticide research. I was thinking, well, I will never get this job because I have no experience with it. And then after the introductions, and I started to say, well, we better get onto the slides. And the first slide showing with all the pathways, just as I was going to talk about it, I was thinking about what to say. Suddenly, electricity went out. There's a big boom, and the whole electricity went out. And here was Dr. Henry Smith standing in the back, frantically trying to get the slides and the projector and everything ready. And of course, nothing worked. And that was, of course, in my favor. And so they opened the door, and there was a little light coming. And so I just said, very calmly, said, well, this is supposed to be this way, and we probably can have some discussion later. And then we finished up the seminar. I was so relieved because I didn't have to say anything about it. And afterwards, people say, hey, you were so calm, in a situation like this. I was totally relieved because I didn't have to say anything about the pesticide. And that's how I got the job at Pullman, because I really didn't know anything about pesticides. But in the first 10 years or so, we learned quite a bit. And in terms of, you know, what the field is about, it turned out that very few people really knew anything about how to do pesticide research in soil. Most of the literature were people who, you know, chemists working with industries like Dow Chemical and DuPont and a few others, they have first developed these, and they had no idea how to work with the soils, but they know how to analyze the compounds. They make C14 labeled compounds, and in the laboratory they can do a lot of things, and they were selling them. And then, of course, you remember that's the period of time, Vietnam War, and with the Agent Orange, you know, spraying all over the places, and so people become concerned what happened to 2,4-D, 2,4-5-T, you know, in the environment, as well as a few other things. So there's a tremendous groundswell about interest in what's happened to the soil. So I was really pretty much at the very beginning of this. So since I was certainly basically trained in chemistry, not in or in soils, but not with any of these chemicals. So when it comes to look at the methodology, and the most interesting things, because these industrial chemists had no idea how to extract these chemicals, because when they thought it was an organic chemical, well, this must be extracted like extracting soil organic matter. So what they do, they use half normal sodium hydroxide, extract all the organic matter from the soil. And then they have to separate, you know, doing precipitation and using columns to clean up. And finally, they have to go through quite an elaborate procedure. I was totally surprised. If you try to analyze a pesticide like this, but that's how it did. And finally, after finish all the cleanup, and they were able to look at the radioactive, C14 labeled materials and do the analysis. And that's how pretty much the field looked like. When we start looking at it from the soil's point of view, I said, wait a minute. You know, these chemicals may not necessarily be so complex as, you know, like soil organic matter, the humic acid, the volfic acid, and so forth. In fact, we were looking at one of the new compounds at the time, which was called a picloram, toradol. It's a picolinic acid. And the first indication, because it was very mobile in the environment. So to make the story short, we were able to extract that material with a 2-normal KCl salt solution out of the soil without removing any organic matter. And all of a sudden, a very, very elaborate procedure simplified into a very simple procedure to be able to analyze. And so that got us interested, saying, well, maybe we should get some more soil chemists into it. And that was the time when Bill suddenly applied to Washington State. He said he was, and we didn't have any money at all. Actually, I was borrowing some funding from other sources. You know, Dr. Brian McNeil, and some of you may know him, has some funding. And so we scraped together some assistantship money to bring Bill there. And that, of course, is a... did anybody find out how to do this yet? Oh, okay. Yeah, we have some slides, but as I said, later on we can go through those very quickly. And that was those days make the setting for Bill. And Bill, just to contrast what happened when Bill started on his PhD research versus the person, you know, just a few years before that, work on a PhD in research. And the title of Dr. Bob Wilson, some of you may know from Nebraska, is a quite well-known wheat scientist there. Bob Wilson's PhD thesis title let's see, what, oh, oh, breakdown and the movement of formulated 2,4-D compounds in soil water system. And if you look at the literature in those days, everybody was doing similar type of things. Look at the compound and put it in the soil and then try to extract and then follow through. And that was pretty good thesis in terms of contribution, because we understood, you know, in terms of the Palouse, the Eastern Washington conditions, because that's quite different from the Midwest. The climate and the soil is different. And we were able to actually come up with some very practical understanding of what 2,4-D is behaving in the soil, and that was quite useful for the farmers. And we thought, well, we made some contributions. Well, then come Bill, just a couple of years later, and his thesis title itself reflect a total quantum jump of the type of research we're actually doing. And his title was Evaluation of the Batch Equilibrium Method for Characterization of Adsorption, Desorption of 2,4-5-D in Soils. Here is only one very small snippet of the whole research aspect, batch equilibration, just to get the adsorption part of it, rather than, you know, the fate, the movement, the degradation, and all of it. That's what everybody else does. But that Bill's thesis is looking at that one particular process, adsorption, desorption process, and using one method, batch equilibration method. And yet he was able to produce a thesis. And that thesis has more impact, because now we are finally looking at what are we doing when we try to extract it? Are we really getting this quantitatively? Are we doing it correctly? Because at that time, EPA was actually just decided to revise the protocol on how to do adsorption, desorption work. And they quoted five papers in the literature. And if you look at those things, and you know, it was a disaster, and Bill did a wonderful job, analyzed all those five papers. So the thesis, if you read it today, in fact, I had to pull it out after 40 years, look at it, I said, hey, this is good work. Because he was able to look at every point on the adsorption, desorption process, you know, the equilibrium, the temperature, and the soil solution ratios, and all of those things about how to do it correctly. And if you look at the literature at the time, and he did a literature review of that, it's all over the places. Some 24 hours, some, you know, just a few hours, some 1 to 100 ratio, 1 to 10 ratio, and a whole bunch of things. And Bill went through the whole process and came up with thesis. Hardly anybody would read the other thesis. If you read today, you still learn a lot. I think that's really the beginning of what Bill shows. He's such a careful person in looking at the methodology, and he analyzed every aspect, and that was amazing. After 40 years, I said, did he write that? You know, I don't even remember that, but now I'm still learning a few things from Bill. I know I'm telling too many stories, but unfortunately, I really want to come up with some of Bill's research work, because now if you start looking at, you know, Brian will show you all the instrumentations and all the fancy gadgets. And starting, you know, when I came here, and he already had a robot system, and many of you probably went through and said, that's such a nice idea, trying to get a robot, you know, doing all the extraction work without having being involved with this. Well, we had to design a particular set of experiments, because the biggest debate at the time is called, what is hysteresis? We had soil physicists, you know, talking about non-equilibrium, because the adsorption process and desorption isotherm, they did not coincide. And there's always displaced a little bit. And they call that hysteresis. But nobody could explain what hysteresis was. And we had some indication there could be some other things happening. So finally, after several studies, Bill designed a study that we wanted to do equilibrium at different times. One is three hours equilibrium, then extract, and then do the equilibrium again, extract, and continue, and see how the desorption takes place. And then we have one at 6 hours, and one at 12 hours, and so forth, 24 hours. So we had several lines. And sure enough, when we start looking at the data start coming out, this is the adsorption line, and the desorption lines just keep further away the longer time you equilibrate, which of course is opposite from what you usually think, because the equilibrium should be reached then while you want to go longer, and it should be the same, but it's not. It just keep on going. But what happened when you look at his thesis, there was one particular point which is even more amazing, is that the 3 hour curve coming down to about six desorption, and suddenly it made the curve further away from an adsorption curve. And then followed the same parallel situation. That point, and according to the thesis, he states, he said that then at the seventh desorption, he actually had the equilibration time of 18 hours rather than 3 hours. And because of that, you find that curve actually shifting even further away from the equilibrium curve. And when you think about that, that's ingenious. You know, by changing the equilibrium time, you actually get away from the equilibrium. And this is exactly what he wrote in the thesis. But the truth of that was not quite exactly the same thing. Why did he have to wait 18 hours to do that? It's not by design, but later on when you look at it, it was brilliant design, because you were able to show the longer you do the equilibration, the further away from that equilibrium curve. What happened was that one morning I was in the office, he came in, he said, "Bill," sheepishly, he said, "Sorry, I overslept." He said, instead of getting up every 3 hours and do the equilibration and then do the extraction and then go back to sleep. And after about 2 days of that, one day he just went to sleep and didn't get up until almost the next morning. And here was 18 hours gone by before he was able to do the next one. But because of that one thing, we actually got more information out of it. This is the researcher's dilemma, but also by serendipity, that was one of the best findings we actually had, because we were able to establish degradation was one of the main cause for the so-called hysteresis effect. And then Bill went on, you know, did a lot of other desorption work and showing how degradation actually. And from that point on, everybody's suddenly not talking about hysteresis in a very holy sense, because nobody knew what it was about. Bill was the one actually showed them. And this is to show, in a way, how sometimes research happens, not because of your intended effort, but because of accident like this. And for that, actually, Bill, you should be congratulated for serendipitous. But one warning, had we had those robots, we would not have made that particular mistake. So remember, sometimes individual observations probably more important than some of the, you know, most sophisticated instrumentation what can tell you. You have to think with your head. And that's perhaps the lesson we learned from Bill. Thank you so much.
Okay. There we go.
Okay.
There's Bill. Whoa.
What did you do?
I don't know. I did something. Okay. So,
go on.
This is his experience. Honors and awards. Publications.
Citations.
Yeah.
And some of the major recognitions.
Research areas. Accomplishments. Then you talked about his absorption and desorption. Types. Accomplishments. Coworkers.
Yeah,
batch equilibrium.
The work is under the top of slide. You this can see that the 3 hour, which is closest to the absorption, and make a curve there, because that's it.
Oh, that's where you overslept.
That's
he planned it.